Hello everybody, it's me Roscoe and welcome to another Kings of Anglia podcast special. And today I'm joined by a very special guest. It's former Town defender Jason Cundy, the man you may hear on your radios when you go to games, after games and all that. Jace, it's a pleasure to have you on. How's things?
Roscoe, very well, thank you, matey. Thanks for inviting me. Yes, you find me in good spirits.
That's good to hear, my friend. And I've been wanting to catch up for a while because, 90s player, but a lot of Town fans still maybe remember you for your time at Town, the goal you scored for Spurs against us, which we'll get on to shortly. But I want to sort of start off the chat, really, is I always do this with all former players, you know, your journey in football, where it all sort of began, because everyone's got their unique stories. But what's your earliest memories of playing football?
Well, it was all down to my dad. My dad was a massive Chelsea fan. He predicted the day I was born that I would play for Chelsea. I mean, I suppose a lot of dads might do that sort of thing. But yeah, he was the one that really inspired me. He used to take me over the park. Even there's photographs and you know, early footage on one of those old cameras that people used to use back in the 60s and 70s, of me running around playing in the park. And it grew from there, really. You know, I enjoyed playing the game and then found myself getting in to little like five-a-side teams or a little mini league or soccer league, whatever you want to call it. And eventually, you know, I realised actually I'd not only loved it, but, you know, I was okay. And it kind of grew from there and there. And then I found myself being kind of scouted by other local football clubs. There was one in particular called Talisand Rovers who always seemed to have the best kids. And then a Wimbledon scout spotted me. That's where I'm born and bred. That's where I'm from. And that was around about the age of 8, 9. But you couldn't do it then. It wasn't possible to go training at such a young age. I think you had to wait till you were under 9 or under 10 or something like that. And then I was at Wimbledon. I was at Crystal Palace, Arsenal, West Ham. But the only club I wanted to play for was Chelsea. So my dad wrote to the club and asked for a trial. One of the scouts came down and watched me and invited me to training. And that was when I was 11. So that's when I first joined Chelsea at 11. And was only really interested in playing for Chelsea at the time. So, you know, I was lucky enough to come through the ranks, go for the youth team, into the first team. And, you know, before you know it, I'm playing for my boyhood club. So it was fond memories, really fond memories.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a dream come true, playing for the team you support and, yeah, putting that shirt on, walking out, knowing you're a Chelsea player. Were you always a defender? Obviously, you know, you're versatile as well. But, you know, where did you sort of start off?
Yeah, well, I started up as a centre forward. That's where, you know, if you look at a lot of the kids, they always, going through your career, you never really start out where you end up, unless maybe you're a goalkeeper. There might be the odd exception, but, you know, we look at the way the game has changed now, how fullbacks have evolved. Fullbacks generally are converted wingers. You know, that's now how, like Gary Neville would have been a defender and stayed there pretty much probably once he broke into the youth team around that time. But now you get fullbacks, they're one of the most part of the attacking setup of a team. And you have now players that are bombing on. I mean, Antonio Valencia is probably a good example of someone who's changed when he was playing in the World Cup, when he moved to United. He was not a fullback, but the way the game has evolved. So I started as a centre-forward, then I went to right midfield, then right back, and then at 15, I had a phone call from Gwyn Williams, who was the youth team manager at the time, and said, we've got injury problems. Can you come and play at centre-back? And I was 15 at the time playing in the youth team. And that was the first time I'd ever played at centre-back. So it just goes to show, right, you find eventually where you... I mean, I couldn't move any further back on the pitch, so otherwise I'd have been in goal, right? But that was the first time I ever played at centre-half, and from that moment forward, I never looked there. I felt comfortable there, and that's where my career grew from there.
Can you remember, you know, the first game for Chelsea? I'm sure your dad was proud as well.
Yeah, QPR away. It felt like it had been coming. You know, the opportunity hadn't quite been there. I've been on the bench a couple of times, been in the squads, but all of a sudden there would have been injuries, and it was QPR away, West London derby. It was just, you know, dream come true to put that shirt on and, you know, make my debut. And it was remember it really well. It's one of those moments in your life that you dream about as a young kid, and, you know, ambitious to do something in the game. And eventually, when you put that shirt on, it was a very proud moment. So, yes, my dad was incredibly proud.
OK, can imagine. And of course, this is an Ipswich Town podcast, but I wanted to chat about, you know, Chelsea and then Spurs. That must have been an interesting move, though, because of the rivalry and stuff. Obviously, a Chelsea fan, you just felt it was the right move for you at the time.
No, complete opposite. No, I signed a four and a half year contract in the November. And in the March, I got a phone call from Ian Porterfield, who was the manager at the time, completely out of the blue, saying, "We've accepted an offer from Spurs and you're going to get a phone call this afternoon from Terry Venables." And I was absolutely, I'm still even saying it now, stunned. It just blew me away. I was at home, still living at mum and dad's house at the time. And I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. I remember asking him actually, what if I don't go? But back then, that really wasn't how it worked. The players had very little power. If the club wanted you gone, you kind of went, really. I felt let down and disappointed that I'd commit myself to this club for, the next 4 years of my life. And Spurs come along, offered some money, and they said yes. So there was a lot of emotions going on, shock, disappointment. And once I sat down with my parents, it became quite obvious that if Chelsea were prepared to take the money over me, they made their decisions, I had to make mine. And it all happened in the space of probably 48 hours from the phone call, from me meeting Terry Venables. And then that would have been on the Tuesday. And on the Saturday, I'm playing for Spurs. It literally happened that quickly, completely out of the blue. And that's how football works. Well, certainly back then, you kind of, do you try and force a player out of a contract now? Very difficult. These boys are sitting on huge salaries and the players have all the power now. Back then, the clubs really, if they wanted you sold and they wanted the money, there was very little you really could do about it.
Did you not really care much about the rivalry? I know there's some players, some players don't play for their boy club, but you're able to with Chelsea and then you go on to join their rival. But
it wasn't the ideal move, was it? Let's be honest. But like I said, they made their decisions. I suppose that's something that I had to do and get over and deal with and just move forward. People don't really understand the financial side of it, what it's like to be a footballer in those situations, especially back in the 90s. It's somewhat different now. These boys are sitting on 200-400 grand a week, some of them. Even the young players now, they're on 40,000-50,000 pounds a week. You try and get a player out of that contract, it's quite difficult, unless they want to go, unless if all parties are happy. And at that time, like I said, I felt a little bitterness that the fact that the club were prepared to sell me, because I've been at the club since I was 11, my boyhood club. It's a bit of a shock, a bit of a disappointment, but that's just football. And you've got to try and remove the emotion out of that because you're a gun for hire.
Yeah. And obviously you joined Spurs and then we've got to segue onto the Ipswich connection because there's a goal that has been talked about a lot. People call it the freak goal. I'm sure you've spoken about it many times. You've been asked about it, but let's bring you back though. That goal itself, 40 yards or something like that, wind assist and all that. But share your memories of that.
It was one of the first games of the season, actually. It was live on Sky. It was on a Sunday. And I just remember the ball breaking from that right-hand side and Jason Dazelle, who I actually knew. I used to see him out in London. So I got to know Jace even before he moved to Spurs. And I remember the ball breaking and he was the closest to it. And I just felt it was one of those balls in the middle of the park that it felt like a 50-50, maybe 45-55 in my favour. And I thought, if he's going to put his foot in, I'm going to take ball and man, because it was just one of those bobbling around. And Jace kind of ran towards it and then kind of stopped. And of course, my momentum at that time was I'd already committed to what was a tackle. Let's be honest, it was a tackle that in the end, it looked quite strange because no one else was. Jace was like 4 or 5 yards away from me. And it came off the top of my ankle and it caught a thermal and just went through the ball and, of course, didn't mean it. But as it left my foot, Neil Ruddock, who I was playing alongside, said, "That's in." Literally, I swear, as soon as the ball left my foot, he said, "That's in." And it looped Craig Forrest over the top of his head, ball and Craig in the back of the net. It's just one of those freak goals that it just every now and then in football, you get these weird goals.
Yeah, and obviously, I think when you joined Town, obviously that got sort of spoken about, and let's sort of segue onto that. How did that move come about? Because I think originally it was a loan move. Obviously, back then it was like loads of month loans and stuff. But yeah, what was the first discussions, and when did you first find out you could be going to Town?
Well, actually, I spoke to George Burley the season before. They tried to get me there. I think Chris Swales signed the season before, and George wanted me to sign, and I couldn't remember what the financial package wasn't quite right, or something happened at Spurs, but Spurs agreed to sell, and I was happy for the move, but the move broke down. So that was the following, that was the previous season, and then I went on loan to Crystal Palace. I spent a month on loan there. I actually played against Ipswich in that particular, I think it was a draw at Selhurst Park, and George told me afterwards that it was that game that he saw me play in, that he thought I'm going to have go back and see if I can get him. I remember going through Tirico, a challenge on the right hand side, and George. I remember George saying that that's the sort of defender that I want. And the move collapsed at Crystal Palace, and then I think it might have been in the November that I moved there. It was a loan initially with a view, and things went well. I mean, it's the results. We were struggling at that time, I seem to remember. You know, we were in the bottom half of the table, and I came along, and then the results managed to improve. And I spoke to George, and they wanted to sign me. I wanted to go there. It's a brilliant club, Ipswich. Absolutely loved my time there. I was only there, just under three seasons, but absolutely loved it. And I didn't hesitate when I knew they wanted to sign me permanently. I just knew I had to make the move, get my career back underway. I think my first game was away at Stoke.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Stoke.
No, South End.
It was South End. Was it? Wait, South End was it? Right, okay. But yeah, and I, once they wanted me, I just wanted to get my career back going, because at Spurs I had injuries and it just completely stalled, and I just had to get out there.
And I've got a picture of you actually signing with George and David Shute this time. So let's bring it up. There you are.
Oh, there you go. Look at that coat.
Yeah, that's what amazing. I thought straight away.
Where is that coat? I used to love that coat.
What's your memories of that day? Like, the press conference, because that's when all the players used to get press conferences. And George looks a bit of a mannequin there, doesn't he? It doesn't look real.
He does. Yeah. He looks well there, George, actually. And Mr. Sheepshanks. Yeah, that was. Yeah, I'd already been there, you see. So I already knew them. Because I've been on loan, the relationship would already kind of started between me with George and Mr. Sheepshanks. And of course, he's gotten very well with him. And once they decided they wanted to sign me, because I was already on loan, the negotiations were pretty simple. It wasn't like meeting for the first time. I had a relationship with George. He liked me. I liked him. I liked the club. It was pretty simple to do in the end. So And then that was the beginning of a new chapter, because I'd been at Spurs for 4 or 5 years, had so many injuries, couldn't get fit, couldn't stay fit. I was way down the pecking order because different managers had come in. Ozzy Ardiles had come in. I think Ozzy might have been manager at the time when I left. I can't remember now. It was a bit of a blur of the managers. But I just had to get my career back on track, and I was very grateful that Ipswich gave me that chance.
And what was that first sort of conversation with George? Obviously, yeah, he knew of you, he wanted you. What was your relationship with him? Obviously, George, a club legend from his playing career, and obviously came back. Obviously, we got relegated from the Premier League, I think, a year or so before that. Sure. But obviously, he was building something here, which, of course, he goes on to do very well. But George, what a man.
Love him. He's still a very good friend of mine, George. I still call him Gaffer. He really did help save my career at the time. As I said, I was going nowhere at Spurs. It was a very... Personally, it was a difficult time at Spurs, really difficult. And he gave me the opportunity to go out and start playing first team football again. And I like to think that I repaid him with everything I got. I was one of those type of players that gave everything that I had. And it was a time when there was young players there. Richard Wright was there, Scoey, Kieran Dyer, who came through. And it was like a younger Gasulian Beak. There's a lot of players that you felt this team could do something. There was a couple of older heads in amongst it, Mickey Stockwell. There's a George in the middle of the park. But it felt like this was like a team that was going somewhere. And then as I joined, things really, really went well, for everyone. and we got ourselves in and around the playoff places and in around the top four, five, six at that time. You might be able to tell me exactly where we were, but we were really going up the table and playing well, playing really well. It was probably in terms of a team, I think some of the best football that I've been involved in at that time. We were a really good team, you know, and really growing.
Yeah, we had a few Ipswich boys come through. You already mentioned, you know, Richard Wright, Kieran Dyer, Jamie Scowcroft, Richard Naylor, you know, Bam Bam as well. You actually scored on your second town appearance, if you remember, 2-1 for Bradford. But yeah, you know, that must have been a good start for you, you know, scoring early goals. Yeah.
And also, one of my good friends in football, Steve Sedgley, was there at that time. And I've been with him at Spurs. Sedgley was one of my mates at Spurs. You know, the families knew one another very well. And he was another one that really helped me. You know, I used to travel up and down with him. I mean, he didn't leave that long after it, to be honest. He went to Wolves, of course. But, yeah, Adam Tanner is another one that I used to travel in with. So, yeah, good days. But, yeah, so I remember that goal. I think it was a left-foot volley.
I don't know. I can't find the footage anywhere.
Right, okay.
No one cares.
Well, because maybe. You can't. It was just outside the box.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, but, yeah, good start. And then, you know, we're doing okay. And then, unfortunately, you got the news with your cancer, diagnosed with that. Can you remember that day or the sort of build-up to it?
Do you know, I do. In the week building up to the game, I think we were playing Oxford at home, I think. And I noticed that one of my testicles was completely different to the other. It was large, heavy. It looked really strange. But I had some stitches in a shin wound, and it got infected, and I was on antibiotics. My glands were up on the inside of my groins, and it was the same side. And I just assumed the glands are up on my groin. Something could have gone on with the testicle. I put it down to that. And I went to see the physio, Dave Williams at the time, and he laughed because it looked quite funny. And he said, well, look, we'll see the club doctor, Dr. Lazar, who sadly is no longer with us. And he, this was about an hour and a half, maybe, home 15 minutes for the game. And I was on the bench getting a massage, and he came in to look at it. And as soon as he saw it, he said, you can't play today. And I'm like, what do you mean I can't play? He said, well, you need to go to the hospital. I'm like, gee, that's not really the reaction you want to see from a doctor. And I said to him, look, I'm playing. I'm in the team. I'm playing. We can do this afterwards, right? Anyway, they tried to arrange for me to have a scan Saturday after the game, and it couldn't be done. And I remember when the ball went out of play and won in that game against Oxford, and my concentration just lost. Maybe someone was injured. And I remember just looking down at the ground and the grass thinking, what is this? And for a millisecond, cancer came into my head, just a millisecond, and then the game restarted. And on the Monday, they arranged a scan for me at a hospital up in Ipswich. And as I remember, it was 9 o'clock. So I lived in London at the time, so driving down. It wasn't too bad down the A12. But as I arrived at the hospital, there were two nurses waiting for me outside. And I remember thinking, who waits for someone outside? Who does that? And I went in, and within seconds, fill that whatever forms. And within, I reckon, less than 3 minutes, I'm on a table having an ultrasound. And within 10 seconds of this ultrasound, maybe 20, the guy doing it said, yeah, this is going to have to come out. And I remember going, what? My hand, I remember my palms being incredibly sweaty. And he said, well, of course, I asked the question. You know, there's so many questions. I said, is it a tumour? And he said, yes. And I said, is it cancerous? And he said, we don't know yet. We'll have to find out. But this is going to have to come out. So that was on the Monday morning. So I'm now driving back down to the A12. I phoned Dave Williams, the club, told them the situation, and went back home to my wife, who was in floods of tears. My mum had come over at this stage now, mum crying. And it's like, you know, I felt quite fine about it, actually. I wasn't as worried about it. I don't know why. Maybe because I was 27, you know, fit. You know, you're a little bit naive then. I think if I had that phone call now, the age I am now, I think I'd deal with it a very different way. But Went up hospital the next day on the Tuesday. Again, everything was there. Private hospital, everyone just waiting for me. And I went in and removed the testicle. And it was one of the most, I promise you, when I woke up from it, my wife was there. The pain was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I was just woke up groaning. And I just, and then they just gave me some more morphine and knocked me out again. It was, oh, as you can imagine, right?
Yeah.
And then I stayed in hospital for maybe a day, maybe two, went back home to recover. And then there was going to be 10 days between when the operation and they were going to find out if it was cancerous. And we didn't have the internet. Well, there was internet, but I never had it, but I'd done as much info searching as I could. And all the classic signs of testicular cancer, they ticked a lot of boxes. And I knew, I had it in my head. This was, I had cancer. I just had it in my head. And then 10 days later, we go to up to Ipswich again, the meeting, and he just said, I'm sorry to tell you, but it's cancerous. And my wife's in tears, and I'm sitting there going, right, I'd already dealt with this. I already mentally, I knew I had cancer. What's the next step? And I went for x-rays, I went for scans, I went for blood tests, and luckily it hadn't spread because I found it at stage one. And because of where the testicle is, it's away from the body, it's harder for it to spread. It can and it will. But at that particular time, I was very lucky, got it at stage one. The testicle was removed. There was no other signs that it had spread to my lymph nodes. And then it said, well, you know, how do we move this forward? So then it was arranged the following week that I was going to have chemotherapy. But I felt fine. So I then went to the club. I went to the club, and I remember sitting there with Dave Williams, the physio, George Berlin, Mr. Sheepshanks, and I had to, you know, in a boardroom, and it was very somber, you know, really somber. And I went in there and I said to him, look, just been told it is cancer. And they all, you know, all men there, I could feel them going, shit. This, you know, you all sense that this aura in the room. And I said, look, I actually feel all right. I mean, because at that time we were going for promotion.
Yeah.
And I said, look, if it hasn't spread, I've only been out 2 weeks. Do I need the chemo now? Because the chemotherapy will just wipe me out. And I said to George, look, if I can put this to the end of the season, I'll find out. Anyway, the doctors weren't having it. They just were saying, look, you might not feel it, but you are ill, and you've got to deal with this now. I said, but, you know, if that's the advice you've got to give me, then that's the advice you've got to give me. And then the following week, I had chemotherapy in a hospital up in Ipswich, and I stayed there for 2 days. And Ipswich actually were playing at home on the night. I was listening to the game on the radio while having chemotherapy, which was quite a surreal moment. But, yeah, thankfully, it didn't spread, and I couldn't get back fit for that season. I did try, but it was just pointless, completely pointless. So, yeah, and then on to the next season.
And, of course, you know, most of your teammates would have known. I think a lot of it was not, you know, maybe shared to the fans because obviously it's, you know, a private thing. Mm. Obviously, people would all go, where's Jason then? Where's our centre-half? But obviously, just go, yeah, he's injured. But when were you comfortable to sort of share it?
Well, because it was so secretive, I remember speaking to someone from the Daily Star and what's the paper? The Star.
Idris Star, yeah.
Yeah. And he thought, and a lot of people had thought, that I had been done for drugs because I just disappeared off the face of the earth. Yeah. You know, one day I'm playing against Oxford. No, it wasn't injured, left the field of play. And the next 2 weeks, there's nothing to be heard of me. And I'm not even in around the ground. So it's hard to, you know, try and put two and two together. So just before the playoffs, we played Sheffield United in the playoffs. And I went with the team up to Bramall Lane. And that following, I think it might be the following Sunday, it was I'd done something in the News of the World, done an interview. And then it was important that the team knew. So I told a lot. Adam Tanner knew at the time. He was one of my best mates. And one or two other players knew, but I told them before a game. I can't remember what game it was, but I had to stand up and tell them, which was, you know, pretty emotional doing that. But yeah, so it was important then that you know, everyone knew the reason why I was out.
And what was that feeling like, you know, returning to action though, you know, after the amount of time you're away? And I'm sure it felt good, because was there a moment in your head like, will I be able to play football again? I know it may not affect you too much in terms of, you know, running stuff.
No, but, yeah. No. I mean, I did. I was asked by a journalist. He said to me, "Was there ever a moment you thought you'd die?" And it hadn't even crossed my mind. And I was quite shocked at the question. But actually, it's quite valid, I suppose, really, when you think about what I was going through. And I remember thinking, "Oh, I wasn't going to die. What are you on about?" But then, you know, you asked about the question about your career. Well, if I felt I wasn't going to die, then I almost certainly felt I was going to get back playing football again. It was just a question of when. And, the following season, the first 10 games, I struggled because, you know, I had the summer off, but the chemotherapy it's a powerful drug, as you probably well know. And I really struggled. We played Bradford away, I think it was. And I think George took me off after about 55, 60 minutes. I couldn't run. And I was really worried about how long the effects were going to last. But thankfully, you know, 10 games in, I managed to find my feet. And that was, as far as I remember, that was the last I really felt as though that the hangover of the cancer had kind of gone.
Yeah, that season you played a lot of games. I think 52 games in total. You're pretty much in and out of basically every game you're playing, which was great. Yeah. And I think you scored 3 goals that year. And obviously Town did reach the playoffs. I want to bring up one game. It was a 5-0 win against Norwich, which is always a result we always like to talk about. Alex Mahey hat-trick, Bobby Petter with the 2 goals. But the destruction derby, they call it. I'm sure that was good to be playing in derbies as well.
Absolutely. I remember that day very, very well. Yeah, Alex was on fire. And we took the lead early, I seem to remember. And we were, as I said, we were playing well. We won a lot of games to nil, actually. And there was a lot of high-scoring games, I seem to remember. And that was one that I think was kind of wedged in amongst quite a few others. But it was a brilliant day. And obviously, local rivals, you know, you go into it, you're fully aware of what you're up against. And how much it means to the fans locally, you get that real sense that in the week building up to it. And you just want to make sure that you put in a performance and you do, you know, do as well as you can. And it couldn't have gone better. Honestly, we absolutely destroyed them. 5-0 flattered them. It was one of those games that they knew, we knew, that there's, you know, after about 25 minutes, they're not getting anything out of this game. And they wilted and we just went from strength to strength. But yeah, what a day. But my memory of that is after the game, I got chosen for a drug test along with one other Norwich City player. I can't remember who he was. And of course, when you get for a drug test, you don't go into the changing room. They literally, as you go in, you're told you've got to go for a drug test with my boots, kit still on. And I went up to the boardroom, you know, and then you've got to do a drug test. Fine. But of course, after you play the game, trying to go to the toilet is impossible. You know, you've got no fluids in you. You know, everything's either sweated it out or whatever. And I sat there for probably an hour and a half just guzzling water. They wouldn't let me have a beer. Everything's got to be water. And I sat there for probably an hour and a half in this room with a couple of older gentlemen for the drug test. And I missed out on, you know, the moment of you know, that euphoria doing the press. And, you know, hour and a half after a game, that's a long time. You know, it was pretty dead. My wife was waiting for me in around the players' lounge, probably. And, I, you know, by the time I get in the change room, everyone's gone. I'm on my own in the change room. So it was quite a surreal, bit disappointing, actually, that's my memory of the end of it. Love the game, but setting up, you know, in a director's box in your kit for an hour and a half, 2 hours, wasn't fun.
No. And I was supposed to do this earlier, but I've got another picture. This is from your first season, and you've got a bit of a bandage on your head. But I found this picture. You're just an action shot. Yeah. There you are.
Yeah.
Doing your Terry Butcher impersonation, maybe.
Wowzers. Yeah, I think I might have come off on that game, you know. I think I was concussed. I came back on, and I remember going up for a header, and I just couldn't see the ball, you know, going up for, and like, where's it gone? And then George is like, right, off you come. It was that Swindon.
I think so. It could be. Yeah, it looks like their badge.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, I couldn't tell you it was against. But, yeah, I think if that, I mean, that might be the game or might not be, but I had stitches. It might have been the game after because you obviously banded your head. But, I remember that just getting concussed. Yeah. Get away with it.
No, definitely not. And I want to talk about kits briefly. I don't know if you care about kits, but that kit is very controversial because of the fade. I don't know which, you know, are you a player that really care about kits? There's also another kit here, which is an away kit. This one here.
Oh, yes.
Abba Ale right there. Yes. The cream kit.
Kit, you know. I like that. I think I might have a copy of that at my mum and dad's house, you know. I think I might have one of those shirts that mum and dad's house.
They resold them, I think. They've redone it. Obviously, a lot of people love retro shirts. I think that's one of the most recent ones. I think Copper have recently done it. But did you really care much about kits back then? Obviously, they were, you know, not as nicely fitted these days. You know, there's a lot of baggy shirts back then.
Not really. I mean, you know, you just kind of wear what you're given. It's didn't really concern me. But that cream one, the black, I think I might have scored West Brom wearing that kit.
I think so. Yeah, let me quickly get stats. Yeah. I actually got a picture of you celebrating one of your goals, and it was a home game. Let me quickly see your goals. So, yeah, West Brom, the 3-2 win.
Right, yeah.
Not bad. But yeah, got this goal. You scored against Charlton in that season. We're mentioning, you know,
the two
games. Yes. This is you celebrating with David Johnson.
That's right. That was a header on a. It was a corner. I think it was this ball rebounded. And I just managed to nod it in. I think we won. You say Charlton that one 3-1.
Yeah, 3-1 win. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course we went on to lose to them in the playoffs, which a couple of weeks later, I think I seem to remember. But I do remember that goal.
And yeah, that season, we got into the playoffs. Obviously, we got into the playoffs 4 years in a row. Yes. What's your memories of, you know, the playoff games? Because, the Charlton game.
Well, the first one, that I the first season I missed out because I had cancer. So that first one was just watching from the stands and was tough to take. The second year was the Charlton one where I played all those games. And I think it might have been a Jamie Clapham own goal.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and we had a go at the Valley. We just come up short. And, in those games, you really want to go. You want to take a lead, you know. You want to go there and have something to kind of build on. And we didn't. And we never really got into the game. We didn't play particularly well. I seem to remember against at home to Charlton. And the second leg, I thought we'd done okay. But in the end, I think, do we lose that one 1-0 as well?
1-0 too, yeah.
Yeah, shame because we come, you know, at that time so close. And then the following season, I damaged my ankle in pre-season. And I hardly played any games. I think I went for an operation on my ankle. And that following, was it Bolton we got knocked out in?
Yeah, Bolton, yeah. Yeah, there was away goals as well. That's when the away goals were still a thing, which is, I think Town fans were very happy. I was actually... Yeah, David Shoeshanks, who actually changed that rule because, you know, it was 2 years in a row we lost on away goals. And, it's just ridiculous. I want to bring up another picture as well. This is just you clapping to the fans. And you sort of did this because, of course, Matty Holland, he did that. Yeah. He used to go around all four, you know, stands.
Yeah.
Sort of followed suit as well.
Yeah, it was something that, you know, when you get a little bit older, you do start to appreciate a little bit more what the fans do. And, you know, being a club like Ipswich where it's so important, it's so communal. The football club, you know, they get, you know, Chelsea, you know, Chelsea's in Chelsea, you know, Chelsea's in a part of London, the most expensive part of, you know, real estate in some of the world. In Ipswich there, it was very different. It was a very communal field. And I suppose you just wanted to make sure that the fans felt appreciated. And Matty and I used to, just go in and just thank the fans. You know, that was, it's not a difficult thing to do. Just show your appreciation. It was harder when we didn't play well, obviously. It's easy to do when you're beating Norwich 5-0. That's the easy part. But I think just to show appreciation for the fans, really.
I've got a bit of a team photo here. A lot of, you know, notable names in this. Tirico, you mentioned earlier. Of course, Kieran Dyer, you know, all the Ipswich boys as well. Simon Milton, who, of course, still works at the club now.
Yeah, Matty Holland.
Well, Jamie Clapham, as you mentioned, there's so many great names in it. You know, who helped you sort of settle and just who you really mentioned a few that you're really close with anyway. But this team, you know, a lot of them went on to help us get promoted to the Premier League in 2000.
That's right. To be honest with you, it was just a great set of boys, you know, and there was no one, you know, everyone really got on. As I mentioned there, just looking at there, we had there some young players, some good players. I mean, Kieran Dyer, I mean, I played in Kieran's debut, I think. But I trained with him, obviously coming up from the youth team, and he trained every now and then the first team. He thought, who is this kid? He was a special player, Kieran. Really good player. And then Matt joined that following season. I got on very well with Matt, Adam Tanner, as I've said there. I used to travel up and down with him. Mogga was just, you know, the old stalwart there, and Mark Venus and see in the back there. So it was a good team. It was a really good time. And George got us playing really well, you know. That second season that I was there, we were desperately, desperately unlucky not to go up.
Yeah. And yeah, of course, it took us a couple more years in 2000. And then, as you said, you got that injury. And then, yeah, unfortunately, you know, sort of George just had his own centre-halves at the time. And when did you sort of know your sort of time was up at Town?
Yeah, I was discussing a new contract at the end of that last season before I broke my ankle. And we were sitting down doing, and said, "Look, we'll come back and do it after pre-season. We'll come and sort things out." And I was trying to get fit at home, and I was running, doing, you know, trying to stay fit. And I was skipping in my back garden, and I turned my ankle and cracked a bone in my ankle, and that was it. That was my pre-season completely kaput. And of course, when you've got an injury like that, I was out injured for, I don't think I'd come back till New Year. So I was out for a good 6 months, maybe longer. And, you know, it was just kind of the story of my career, really. You know, just when things started to go well, get over the cancer, have a good season, break your ankle. So, yeah, that was a real difficult time. And at that time, Georgia brought in a couple of the centre-halves. Can't remember who came in now. But I was down, you know. You can't – someone's got to be out for 6 months. And you know that, you know, you're going to want some recovery, some replacement. So, yeah, by the time I come back, I was down the pecking order. And yeah, it was disappointing to leave. I loved it there. I was happy to sign a new contract. But, we didn't get promoted. So it was a double whammy. And then they let me go. So that's football.
Yeah, pretty much. And, yeah, can you remember your last day? And, you know, obviously you went on to join Portsmouth. But, yeah, being at a club, you know, those couple of years, you've been at the club as well.
I went down there and, you know, I had a few questions for George because I felt, though, that towards the end of the season I could have played more. And I literally walked in and I was expecting to go through a contract, but I wanted to have a conversation with him. And the conversation started, "Look, thanks for coming down, but we're not going to renew your contract." And that was it. So all these questions I was going to put to George, what's the point now? He's, you know, the answers are going to be completely irrelevant. So I went back home and then I went on holiday with my family, Italy, I think, went for 2 weeks. And while I was away, an agent was just working on clubs that needed a centre-half. I was on a free, but, you know, of course then the fact that my contract wasn't renewed, I could leave on a free. There was no fee. And then Portsmouth came in and, it's not a million miles away from where I was. I grew up Wimbledon, just down the A3. Went down to go and see Alan Ball and liked what he said, and I signed. And it was pretty simple, actually, you know, once the deal was done. But that didn't last long. I mean, within 6 months, I'd injured my knee and never played again. So, yeah. But I remember playing against Ipswich. I think we drew 1-1 at... yeah, we did. Yeah, it was down at Pompey, at Fratton Park. Yeah. And, so that was it. I think I only played about 13, 14 games for Pompey and then retired at 29, which, you know, had a quite turbulent last 3 or 4 years of my career, either injuries or, you know, cancer or something like that.
Did you feel that was just the right time to call it a day? You just felt you maybe not be able to get...
Oh, I was forced out of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, the knee, I was told very early on, I hyperextended, my body went over my knee and it cracked the cartilage and it was bone on bone. And I was told very early on from the injury that this could end your career. I'm like, brilliant, you know, I only just got here. And then the following year, so I was out from November time, December time for the rest of that season. And then I then had to negotiate a package so that, because I still had 2.5 years left or 2 years left on the contract. I think two years. So that had to be sorted out. And then around about the November time, think it might be November 2000, I think. That was when I officially retired. But I've been retired for a good 8 or 9 months at that point.
Did you know what you were going to do? Did you obviously no one no like at 29 you hope you're going to play for another six years. That. But did you have any backup plans? Like once again, you know, back then, you know, players, you know, football was, you know, what you wanted to do, and you know, yeah, if I couldn't do that, then you're like, oh no. But yeah, did you have anything?
No, I was forced into making a decision. I was, you know, I had insurance and insurance paid out, so I just had a new son who was born in May. The May before I retired, so I was quite in a good position. I was still getting paid by Portsmouth. I had the luxury of doing the package, getting the 2-year contract paid up, and also the insurance. So I was in quite a nice position. I didn't have to make a decision straight away. I could take my time, and I took a kind of a year off really, and just kind of gathered my thoughts. And then a good friend of mine, Damien Matthew, who I was in the youth team at Chelsea, he was an academy coach down in Cobham, and said to me, look, we're coaching, you know, ex-players coming along, we'd love to, you know, to invite you down and see what you think. And I went down and, you know, thought, and I'm shadowing Damien, you know, with the under-12s it was. And then eventually the following, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, I'm thinking, I'm enjoying, you know, this, because I turned my back on football, really. I was quite bitter when I left the game. I didn't really watch football, didn't really have any interest in it, because I felt a little bit let down by the game. You know, it was really a strange period for me. I had a newborn son, which was great, but then my career was over, which wasn't so great, and I had to think about what I was going to do. And going back into football straight away didn't feel right. Just didn't feel. I was still quite angry and bitter towards the game, and it was a good time for me actually to come out of that. To come out there, but after about a year, to come out and get back into football, because that's all I knew. And I was at Chelsea's academy for best part of 3 seasons. Really loved it. Done my UEFA B. I was working towards my A license. Went on plenty of coaching courses, and of course, working back at Chelsea, I'd kind of gone full circle. Which, you know, like I said, a massive Chelsea fan. It was a pretty easy decision to make to go back coaching there.
And unfortunately, cancer again diagnosed. I'm sure that must have been what have I done wrong to, you know.
Well, what happened on that occasion was my oncologist, because I was still going to see him in remission for 5 years. I was still in that 5-year period. I went to go and see him, and he suggested that I have a biopsy on my other testicle, because he felt that my circumstances indicated that it could appear again in the other side, not return, because that it doesn't work like that, especially the cancer I had, but it could appear in the other side. And you only get a handful of men a year in the UK that has this, you know, that finds it in the other side as well. And I'm like, yeah, brilliant. Again, this is this really does sum things up. And I had the biopsy, and I went to find out the results, and it turned out that there was precancerous cells there, and it was a question of when it's going to return. It's returning. You don't know when though, not if, when. And I was given. He said, "Look, it could appear. You could get it tomorrow. You might get it next year. Might get it next month. Might get it in 3 years' time. But one thing's happening. You're getting it." And of course, losing one testicle is one thing, but losing both, I've got to tell you, the complications that come with that as a man are pretty horrendous, right? Pretty horrendous. And I'll leave it to your own imagination what that might do. And I'd had two boys. I was, you know, we might have wanted a third, but that at the time wasn't really on our minds, my wife at the time. And I decided to have radiotherapy. It was I think an 8-week or 6-week course of radiotherapy, which they basically just kill the testicle, therefore killing the precancerous cells. The testicle therefore will never do its job again. I can't produce sperm, which, you know, now I can't naturally conceive now. But at that point, I'm like, I don't care. I'd rather live, you know. And yeah, so that was a brilliant, you know, that was a setback, because of course I then radiotherapy, that's a, you know, that takes it out of you as well. So yeah, that was the early 2000s on that particular occasion. So that was it. And I can't get testicular cancer again anymore. One of them's dead and one of them's in a jar somewhere, but that's, you know.
And that's good. A good story that I've, you know, read, and it's very known. You know, obviously you got another son because of the frozen sperm, which just science, mate. Just science is just incredible.
It's unbelievable. He, Leonardo, who's 9 now with my new wife, and when I met my new wife, she didn't have children but wanted them, and I told her I couldn't naturally conceive, but I did say there's some stored sperm in a freezer somewhere in Cambridge. It was, and. This, so it was frozen. This was before I had the chemotherapy back in the March of 97. And he was frozen for 18 years. And then the second time we went through IVF, my wife fell pregnant. So, yeah, it's quite a mad story. It's quite a mad story. And he's actually older than my 24-year-old, if you really want to put it like that. My 24-year-old was born in 2000. And, of course, he was conceived in a very different way. In a jar in March 97. But the wonders of science, it's quite incredible,
miracle of life and all that. It's incredible. Yes. And obviously, yeah, you've recovered from that, and now you're as I said in the intro, you're a well-known voice on the radio, in the cars and everywhere. Talk Sport, how did that sort of come about?
That came about actually, they asked me, this was Talk Sport, this would have been around about 2003 maybe, to go on and talk about my experience of cancer. That was the reason I went in there. It was a mid-morning show, and I was on air for about an hour talking about my experience, like I've done with you now. And the producer was an Ipswich fan, and he said to me, look, you come across pretty well, would you be interested in doing some other bits with us? I'm like, yeah, you know, throw me, you know, let me know. Anyway, it probably was about maybe a year later that they started getting me in doing bits. So it didn't happen straight away. And of course, this was when Roman Abramovich took over Chelsea. I was coaching the academy. This all happened at that time. I was in coaching there. Chelsea then brought in Jose Mourinho. So we're now talking 2004. We're spending money like it's going out of fashion. Ranieri's been sacked. Jose comes in. And they wanted someone that really kind of had their finger on the pulse at Chelsea. And they started to get me more and more stuff, not just talking about Chelsea now, but other bits and pieces, going in and doing other shows. And it just snowballed from there, really. I got an opportunity. I'm very lucky, very fortunate. I didn't have the most illustrious career at all, And there's a lot of other people that have done far more in the game than me, but I got the opportunity. And that's, I've been doing Chelsea Talk Sport since 2005, so it's 20 years I've been there now. Still do Chelsea TV, to work on the media side for them. And it kind of just felt like a natural way to go in and, you know, involved in football. There's not many, there's only so many avenues into football once you retire. Either you coach, you manage, you talk about it. You know, there aren't that many routes in. And I was lucky enough to be given a chance to be in the media, and it's great fun. Absolutely love it. Very lucky. Been doing the sports bar now for 17 years. So it's a lot of fun. Very, very lucky.
Yeah, it seems like good fun. And I'm actually just going to take you back briefly, and we'll wrap up the chat. But I've got a picture here actually of, I think this is when you're obviously plugging the awareness of, you know, of
right,
cancer stuff. But there's a picture of you with a DVD with some balls as well. Can you remember this?
I remember that jacket though. I think that's another one. That doesn't even look like me. Do I remember that? I can't lie, I don't. I kind of do. I've done a lot of stuff around that time.
Of course, imagine, yeah.
That looks like it's in my back garden as well. Yeah, I've done quite a lot of stuff around that time. And then I went through my divorce, which was, you know, quite, a lot of the contacts and things I did for people, that kind of, because we did stuff together. Yeah. And my wife did some stuff, and it kind of felt that it was difficult just for me to go in and do that sort of stuff. But I'm happy to talk about it, as you've seen, you know, if I can help any young men out there, you know, check yourself or get your partner to check you. It's all, you know, whatever works. But just know, if there's any changes in your body, just know what your body feels like. And young men out there, still, you know, it's still getting testicular cancer, but make sure you see a GP. That's what they're there for.
Definitely my friend. Yeah, I'm sure that's helped a lot of people, hopefully. And yeah, just talk about, you know, Ipswich Town, because, yeah, you know, we've had a lot of coverage on TalkSport this year because of what's happened. Obviously, there's a lot of town connections. You know, you've got Matty Holland, you know, you've got Darren Bent, Darren Ambrose, and a lot of the producers as well.
There's Alan Brazil. Don't forget Big Al.
Yeah, of course. Can't forget Alan. Yeah. But yeah, that's another nice little touch with town fans. I always know there's a, and obviously yourself, you know, you're hosting your own show. So people like, town connections. So as you mentioned, last 24 months has been incredible.
It's been astonishing. You know, we are really a Premier League channel and Champions League channel, but, you know, there are teams that go down. Of course, Town slipped third tier of English football. I mean, that's some slide. But Kieran's done an unbelievable job, remarkable stuff. And of course, when, you know, the higher profile the games you play in, the more interest the media have. That's just how it works. And of course, Town will now, you'll see, as you've seen in the Premier League in the past, that was 23 years ago, something like that, the last time you were there. The difference now, I mean, it's an absolute juggernaut, the Premier League, absolute juggernaut. And if Kieran can stay there next season, then I think that will be a huge success. You've seen this year, they've had a go Luton. You know, Sheffield United haven't. They've been shocking. Burnley, towards the end of the season, you know, they had a go, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be, and that everyone, you know, attached to Town will know it's not going to be easy, but not impossible. It's not impossible because there are some clubs that, you know, look at Forest. Forest just escaped this season, you know, just. I know they've had their own difficulties. But I wish everyone at the club all the best. You know, it'd be good to see you guys back in the Premier League. And of course, now you're a Premier League club, people will be talking about you more. That's just how it works.
I think you mentioned it was actually a sort of viral clip, obviously a Leicester fan, you know, moaning about Ipswich. That obviously was a big talking point. And, you know, I'm sure you support Ipswich, you back Ipswich, we know, if someone says something bad about us.
Yeah. I remember that caller, actually. He had a right pop at Ipswich. I think he, yes, I do remember that. It was on my show, right?
Brian. I think his name was Brian or something. Yeah,
it was. I remember. I think we called him Bitter Brian.
Yeah,
I think that's that thing. You think you got that nickname? Yeah, looking forward to having Ipswich Town back. I mean, I seem to remember Ipswich done pretty well against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge one year. I think did you beat us there?
Potentially, yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I got a draw at least. So, my loyalties only lie one place. You understand, right? When that game, but yeah, it'd be good to have Ipswich Town back in, and you know where we are. Sports bar, give us a ring when you're traveling back. And to be honest with you, a lot of them have done. It's, you know, it's not uncommon getting Ipswich Town fans phoning up, especially midweeks.
Definitely, my friend. Well, it's been a pleasure. Any other business, any other notes? You know, how would you just sum up your Town career? And I'm sure you know,
I loved it, absolutely loved it. Like I said, I became still speak to Adam Tanner, still speak to him. Good to see Dave Johnson's boys doing well, I remember good boy Dave. And like I said, I'm good friends with George Burley. You know, I still message George every now and then. Hopefully I'll be seeing George a little bit more now that Ipswich are back up into the Premier League. But no, absolutely love my time there. Got nothing but good things to say. It's a good club. Brilliantly looked after me throughout my cancer. You know, couldn't have done any more. Made sure that, you know, that everything was done the right way. And I'm no doubt if the DNA of that football club will still be very much the same. And Kieran McKenna has come in and you know, moved you boys forward. So good luck. And yeah, and thanks for the interview. It's been a trip down memory lane.
It's all my Jason. Thanks again.
Pleasure.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.